Hi. First off, thank you so much, everyone, for coming to the session. I am personally really excited to see a lot of you here today, and I'm really, really lucky to have two colleagues on the stage that are experts in their own rights. My name is Miles Matteson. I'm the solution specialist for Data Platform. I share the stage today with Matt Simpson on the far left here, who's a cloud solution architect, and of course, Chris Lowe, group manager in architecture, data, and analytics for Genesis Energy. And today's session is Microsoft Azure SQL Server Data Warehouse made simple, and we're going to take you through quite a great way of seeing how this technology works. So Chris is going to come and join us later on and take you through what Genesis Energy has been doing, and Matt's going to actually take you through the technology end to end. So today I'm going to give you an overview of Azure SQL Data Warehouse. We're going to look at the design patterns. We're going to look at how to load data into the Azure SQL Data Warehouse with Matt. And then we're going to hear a real-world story, Genesis Energy's journey around using this technology. So before I start, how many of you are actually using Azure SQL Data Warehouse? Oh my gosh. No. There should be more hands. Hopefully after the session, I'm going to ask how many of you are going to use Azure SQL Data Warehouse. What we'll do is we'll get straight into it. The guys will come and join me later on the stage. So let's get right into it. So the first thing I wanted to do is really give you a bit of a baseline, a bit of an overview. Now, Dandy showed this slide early on, and I was really excited about how comprehensive our stack is. So let's have a look at it. So today, this is the world that we know and love around data warehousing and analytics with SQL Server on-premises. And with SQL Server 2016, we've had the most significant release of SQL Server since 2005. It is really, really exciting to see the amount of capabilities we've got in that product. But when we actually look at, we also have a common set of tools to manage that, but when we actually look at our cloud platform, particularly the Microsoft Cloud Data Platform, we have just as much rich, if not richer, set of tools to be able to do the same things, but slightly different. And that difference is something that we're going to cover off today in detail. Now, I'm not going to go through all of this because everyone has seen this slide from Dandy a couple of times, but I wanted to just show you where we're drilling into today. So we're going to be focusing primarily on Azure SQL Data Warehouse, Azure Data Factory, and we're going to show you how the Power BI service interacts with that as well. And so this session is only looking at a small part of our cloud data platform. So let's just sort of have a little bit more context about where Azure SQL Data Warehouse sits inside the cloud data platform. Good news, these slides will be available after the session as well, which is good. So when I look at the Azure SQL Data Warehouse, I often think about how our world's changed, particularly around data warehousing. Data warehousing has gone through a fundamental shift. When I first started in the industry, my main job was to get data clean, sanitized, made into an accurate model so that when people made decisions on it, they could trust the data. Now, that worldview around data has changed. No longer do my customers want to have fully sanitized data. Does anyone know why I don't want fully sanitized data? Too slow? That's too slow is a good answer. But there's another reason. One more? Exactly. And that might be value is huge. Okay. Now, when we look at the process of doing advanced analytics, the last thing we want to do to our data customers is remove outliers and hide the things that are not accurate or correct. Because they want to use that to identify trends and outliers to be able to make some decisions. And to really do that, you need to take a modern data warehousing approach. And I really believe Cortana Intelligence Suite is the best place to start that journey. And as I said, we're only going to be looking at a small part of that today. But if you're wanting to actually handle unstructured, semi-structured data that you don't necessarily want to clean, the best place to do that is to put it into a platform that you can turn on and off, burst up with performance, add additional compute, and try and experiment without having to necessarily build out all of that infrastructure that you do on premises with SQL today. And that's what's really exciting for me today. A modern data warehouse has changed to being not only giving that single version the truth, nice, clean, sanitized data, but it's also giving us access to that kitchen, that raw data. And so as data warehouse practitioners, we're constantly fighting that. The other thing that's changed for me, I believe, is that we're no longer just talking about doing dimensional models. Now, that's something that we've all talked about. You know, we've talked about this version of doing an information model versus doing a third normal form layer or doing a star schema layer. The stuff that you're going to see today isn't necessarily a dimensional model. And that approach has really been taken because of the way the data is being produced to handle those scenarios that I talked about earlier. So hopefully you went to Dandy's session on the Cortana Intelligence Suite. If you did and it was recorded, I really recommend that you go and have a look at that. So let's just go over and have a bit of an overview of what the Azure SQL Data Warehouse is. So first off, it is a massively parallel processing engine. So it's different to your SMP architecture that you know and love today. So it means that we can resize it with under a minute. We can add additional compute nodes for performance. So we might want to add more performance when we're loading data. So a good example might be our ETL routines need to speed up to be available. Well, we can give more compute, which means that we can do things a lot faster. It's also something that we're able to do hybrid scenarios with. So not all your data necessarily needs to live in SQL Azure. It could live inside your traditional SQL Server 2016 system. And we're going to talk about some techniques around that. But more importantly, the same management tools that you use and understand today to run SQL Server, you can apply against the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Now, there are some small differences because it is a different architecture. But the fact is, the management tools and how you query it is very, very similar. Now, the other thing, too, is that because of the way the technology works, we've got a really simple model for being able to do billing, for you to be able to manage your environment, and we're able to handle different types of data latency. So we can handle fast-moving data, we can also handle latent data, and we've got a really low-cost model for that. And if you're wanting to look at this, I'd love to sit down with you and take you through how to size up an Azure SQL Data Warehouse environment. My contact details are in the slides, so please come and give me a call, and I'll take you through how you can look at that environment for your organization. So we're going to look at lots of different design patterns, but one of the patterns that I'm really excited about is this technology called Polybase. Now, how many of you have actually heard of Polybase? Okay, there's still not enough hands up on that one. Polybase is like Link servers, only it works better. Okay, it is the ability for us to be able to query across database systems on SQL Server 2016. But more importantly, has the ability for us to query from one single compute node or one single SQL server across multiple systems, whether that's in the cloud, whether that's on premises, or whether that's on a Hadoop. And so let's just have a look at that scenario. And this is one of the scenarios that Matt hopefully is going to take you through today, where we're actually able to run a Transact SQL query directly against Azure SQL. And then that query will actually break down and either take data out of the SQL environment, or it will actually take it out of blob storage or Hadoop node, and then it will return that back to the SQL Server environment. Now, whether that technology was originally designed with Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Now, that technology has been brought down to the SQL Server 2016 release. So this is how you can do a hybrid environment, which is really, really great. Now, this gives you the ability to handle that unstructured, semi-structured data. It also gives you a low-cost option for storing data that you might not know what you want to do with and still be able to query and work with it in a meaningful way. So let's just sort of cover off again what the Azure SQL Data Warehouse really is. So first off, it's a platform as a service. That means that, you know, DR, patching, upgrades, that's all taken care of. Okay, so it's a managed service. It's using massively parallel processing. This means that we're not talking about terabytes of data, we're talking about petabytes of data. So scalability is not an issue with this service. It's using in-memory column store. Now, we're all familiar with that technology with SQL Server, but in this particular implementation, we're able to spread data across our compute nodes, and we're able to spread that load so it scales out. Now, we also have the ability to use Polybase, which means that we can join your SQL Server 2016 on-premises data, so you might have customer data on-premises, with your large data sets in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So this is how you can partition some of that sensitivity if you need to. And again, just to reiterate this, it's a data warehouse as a service. Now that's something that's really exciting for me, and I know it's exciting for a lot of people in the room because they have been looking at some of this. So let's just sort of break down the technology a little bit about how MMP works. Now, what we're essentially doing here is we have a compute node that will take a query, it'll break that query down to, control node, and it'll break that query down to a whole series of compute nodes. Now, what a compute node is a logical container of compute that we're actually able to apply to where the data lives in our storage lab. Now, we're actually able to scale that up and down, and that's part of the elasticity of the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. What's exciting about this is that if you've got a large data set that you're trying to work with, and believe me, we're going to see some large data sets today, you can actually partition that by a particular date or a particular field or a particular column, and you're actually able to spread that load across the compute nodes. And this is how we're actually able to not only scale the queries, but also means we can load data at the same time as querying data. And that's actually a very unique capability with MMP architecture. So just to do a wrap up some design patterns, and we're going to see some of these in action today. So you've got model ways of how you can load the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. You can use SSIS. And in fact, there's a feature pack that's available today. You just go to the search SQL Server feature pack, and you'll find the adapter to connect SSIS to the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. We've also got Polybase, which I think is really interesting. So I talked about it from being a querying perspective, but it's also bidirectional. This means that I can do updates, deletes, and inserts with Polybase as well. The other thing that I'm able to use is technology like a traditional BCP, Azure Data Factory, which we're going to see a little bit before, but I can also use AZ Copy as well, which is pretty exciting. Now, we're going to see some of these design patterns. I'm going to ask Matt to come up and take you through how this actually works. So I'd like everyone to give Matt a big hand. So it's his first session with us today.
Hey.
I'll be back later for questions.
Cool. Thanks, mate. Awesome. Thanks, Miles. Yep. So we're going to just go over some patterns here, and I've just thrown up the three technologies that Miles kind of covered before. So SSIS, we're going to do Polybase, just kind of an ad hoc import, and then we're going to use ADF. Now, Azure Data Factory is a way to orchestrate all of this. So if you've got an existing investment in SSIS, then that would be a good place to start. If you just want to get going and you want to pull an extract, you can put that into blob storage and then push it straight into the warehouse, which I'll show today. And then if you want to kind of take to the next level and get onto a more of an orchestration piece, then that's where Data Factory comes in. I'm just going to show the kind of the extract and load functions. You can do some transforms there, but we're not going to cover that today. This is the made simple session, but it is a very advanced tool. So I am going to jump over to... Cool. And no session at this year's Ignite would be complete without a bot. This is connected to my source and build and release system. So I've stored all of my demo in a source control in VSTS. So I'm just going to go and kick off a new build of ADF. Why I'm doing it now is it takes a while, but that's going to come back and say everything's good. But you'll notice over here in my Azure portal, I've got a data factory already. I've kind of done some of the setup. You didn't really want to watch me do some of the data warehousing setup. It's pretty point and click for this stuff to set it up. So I've kind of taken the liberties to do that. But you can see here that we've triggered a new release. So that's going to go off in the background and deploy a couple of data factories to my Azure tenant. It's going to do test and production, so I can do some testing and then release that into production. Just take a kind of a visual, a mental picture of this, because there'll be some things appearing soon. The first step really was SSIS, and this is kind of a real kind of oversimplified package, but it's just the data flow. So I've got a local SQL server here, and I'm just going to push it into the warehouse. Now, this guy takes a while, so we'll just leave him going, and we'll jump over to the next session I've got. And I really don't care about that. I've set up a warehouse. Literally, it's just bare bones at the moment. I've created a couple of tables because we don't want to see me have to kind of go through that on stage laboriously. But you can see here that there's, you can see here that the SSIS one. So we've got a bit of data down at the bottom, but there's nothing in these the ADF, the ADF test, or the ADF prod one. So that's just the just an example of how SSOS works, and that's just to set the scene of the current warehouse. There is nothing in it. SSOS job is going away now. So what I'm going to show you now is Polybase. And Miles explained it very well earlier. So what I have done is I've taken another SSOS package, and in here I have basically this has taken the SQL Server again, my local SQL Server, and it's pumped it into a blob. So it's just pushed all the data into blob storage, and then basically in the warehouse I need to basically link that, make an external relationship between the blob and what I'm doing here. So I can create a scoped credential. And then I then say, this is the external data source. It's saying it's Azure Storage. So we use the Hadoop APIs to talk to the Azure Storage engine. So basically, we're creating an external data source now. And that external data source, if we go and look over here, you should be able to see that this guy now has turned up. If he's going to refresh, it might take a while. So, oh, OK. Yes. Yep. So there we go. Azure Storage.
Thank you.
So then we create a file format. Now I've exported my file using the pipe delimiter. Now I borrowed this data off our friends at New Zealand Stats. It's just some building control stuff. It's about 5 million rows so far. And then what I'm going to do here is just basically create an external table. So this is a good scenario here for creating data that's not inside the warehouse. So basically, you can create a table that sits outside. So that's then created an external table, which should appear now. So like Miles said, we can actually query this, and the storage is in Azure Storage, and it's not pulling it into the warehouse. So this could be used for doing different types of loads. And then basically, what I'm doing now is creating a table from a select, which is the external table, and it's just creating a table called Polybase. So that's going to go off and drag the stuff out of storage and actually create a table inside my warehouse. Now I can create some stats on it. We don't do that by default, so I could create some statistics over the top. But yeah, that's essentially loading Polybase in now. And if we have a look at what it's up to, it's still executing that other query. So while that's happening, I'm going to switch gears and move to ADF. So Data Factory, again, let's just see if my... you can see now we've got a test instance, so my release process is basically going off and doing this. So I'm going to show you how to do it manually, but basically I've templatized this entire deployment and... I can automate the build and release process. So this is essentially the data factory that I've got here. I've just called it Ignite, and I can do some interesting stuff here. I can manage and monitor it, and we do have this copy data preview, so you can actually go in and visualize some of your assets that you've got, create the links and associated. So really, but I like to do most of my stuff in Visual Studio. So Visual Studio has another plugin. Miles was talking about some of the content packs we have. This is basically a scenario where we have some data sets, we have some link services, and we have a pipeline. And very simplistically, we have an input data set, a copy activity, and an output data set. So obviously my input data set is the blob storage. So I'm using the same blob in all of these, in the whole thing. I'm using the exact same source data. Either I'm taking it from the SQL source and I've exported it to blob, and then I'm taking it all the way to the warehouse. So I'm using the same set of reference data. This basically is a JSON template that describes my input and output sets. You can get into some, this is the orchestration engine, so you can get into some slicing and scheduling and stuff like this, but I've just created a real simple one-time copy that's going to take stuff out of the storage account and do the copy activity and push it into the warehouse. And I can publish this straight from Visual Studio, and you can see my prod instance has turned up already, but I'm just going to push it into the one that I created manually. And this is basically going to take all the link services, the tables, the inputs, the outputs, the links, and the pipeline, and just generate the whole thing and then kick off a job. So you can easily you can develop locally and then push it to Azure. So this is going to go through, it's going to upload these JSON files, and then essentially, yeah, kick off the task. So that's running. SSS job still going. And this guy is just about to finish. So what we can see in Visual Studio now is if we go back to the releases here and refresh it, you can see there I've got my release 11 has gone through, and it's actually currently deploying to my production environment. So if it works in test, then it automatically goes to prod. So I can know that I can develop in here. But yeah, you can gate this and stage it and do all sorts of things. I'm just showing the automated release builds. So that is Visual Studio, and then what we have here. So basically, we've run the task successfully now. So we should be able to pop back over to the portal and take a look at this in action. So this is the Data Factory module outside of the portal, and this will basically gives you another visual representation of what's going on. So you can basically look at the pipelines, and you can see the activity. I'm probably a bit quick; it hasn't kicked off the job yet. But if we look at the other ones that I have, so if we look at the test, you can see that test's been deployed, and we have just down here we've got a couple of data sets. We've got a scheduled pipeline and a couple of data sources. So it's exactly the same template that I've used, and then pushed it into the test environment. So. Sorry, that's the wrong tab. If we go to manage and monitor. So yeah, you can see this copy activity is basically taking stuff out of the blob and pushed it into the data warehouse. So you can see that the output for test is going. So if I go back to my SQL query and then we have a look at this again, we can see the status of some of these. So yeah, you can see that the ADF test is already gone, and the Polybase job SOS is still going. But you can see as the jobs kick off, it's going through. So that's a couple of million rows in there in about 10 minutes. So, and that's me. Cool. Okay, thank you. We'll flip back to Chris. Go.
Thanks. Shortcut. Okay, thanks, Miles. Matt. Now, so you guys heard from Miles and Matt on what you can do with SQL Data Warehouse and how you can do it, and how you can do it quite simply. This part of the session is really it's the customer story, right, through the customer lens. This is what we actually did, right, and why. And it's not just about why we chose load pattern A or load pattern B. It's also about why we went down the Azure SQL Data Warehouse route in the first place. Because, I mean, the first decision you're going to have to make is this for you, right? When you hear what I say, you may well challenge some of it. Mentally you think, oh, I'm not sure about this. This may or may not work for me. You should challenge it, right? I encourage you to challenge it, maybe not right in the middle of the session. But it's good, because when we challenge each other's thinking, that's how we create better solutions. That's what we're aiming for.
Just get past there. Come on. How did we get to demo that fast?
Right. Just a very quick at-a-glance slide about Genesis Energy, right, just to prime the conversation. I promise I won't labour this. You probably can't read the smaller text. That's by design. I'm not going to go through this blow by blow. Right, just gives you some context about our business model and how there may be some adjacencies with yours. Most of us know us as a Gentailer, right? We have generation assets, both hydro schemes in North and South Island. We have Huntly, our coal and gas plant. Bit of wind farm down the lower North Island and investment in Kupe Oil and Gas. And then the other part that everyone probably knows is Genesis Energy main brand, the retail and energy online, right, our other retail brand. And they supply to residential and SME markets, electricity, gas, LPG, and latterly solar, right, so it's a new product for us this year. The in between the two, you probably know a bit about the New Zealand energy market. There's no concept of copper cables hardwired from the hydro scheme through to a residential house, right? Everything gets traded on a wholesale market, right? So we have a wholesale division that's continuously trading 24/7 at half-hour intervals, right? All the retailers do, where we sell into the market and we buy off the market. So that's quite an important thing for us, that one, in terms of optimising your portfolio. There's a bit going on. It's not just the wholesale market. They have the ASX, they have the futures, they have swaptions, right? Contracts they enter into with other parties, and there's carbon trading going on. So essentially, you know, if you look at our model, there's almost certainly some aspect of it. It's quite a broad spectrum of capabilities. You see some adjacencies with something in your industry. Finally, around retail, it's about 646,000 customers, or more or less. That makes us, we're the largest retailer by ICP count. Compared to telco and financial services, utilities around the world have been a little bit slower getting into things like the digital channels. So obviously we're trying to make up for lost ground at a great rate of knots. So yeah, we've got aggressively pushed into digital. We have mobile apps and customer web portals and so forth for both our brands. So that in itself is also generating a lot of new data sources for us. In terms of the motivation, you know, why would we want to go and re-implement and redeploy into Azure SQL Data Warehouse, or in fact a massively parallel appliance in the cloud at all? It's not to speed up corporate reporting in month end. Okay, I mean, we can already close month end in 2 days flat, so for me to improve that to 1.5 days is of zero value whatsoever. Right, yeah, that's not the reason for doing it. To do that would be one of those technically satisfying hobby projects, and we haven't had time to do one of those for quite some time now. It's really about moving from reporting, right, which is what a lot of the traditional, at least in our case, legacy data warehouses are structured and built all around, right, into supporting analytical insights and putting that capability in the hands of a much wider set of users. The ability to use our data to inform decisions tomorrow, right, that are materially different from the decisions we make today, and put that in the front line, yeah, that's the goal. Now, if you're sitting there a little bit cynical when you hear that sort of thing, I mean, honestly, you read this all over the internet, right? Everyone's using data to drive analytics. Everyone's got big data, this, that, and the other. Right? And you'd be right to be a little bit cynical. I mean, it's a bit like teenage sex, right? Everyone claims to be doing a bit more of it than they probably really are. So rather than talking to you for the next couple of minutes about how we do this machine learning time series forecast model here, and this K means unsupervised clustering our algorithm there, right? And we could just kind of go blah, blah, blah. I thought I'd just bring it to life, make it a little bit more credible. So I just got a quick, rather than me spend 3 minutes talking about it, quick 3 minute video showing you what we actually use the data for in the data warehouse at Genus Energy, derive some insights, and that's away from the traditional corporate reporting. Okay, so that was just, right, rather than me just talk at you about what we do, I thought it would be helpful just to show you some of the things that we really do with the data. So why Azure SQL Data Warehouse? You know, if we can close in 2 days, our corporate reporting, our existing data warehouse infrastructure can't be that bad, right? You know, the Oracle infrastructure actually performs very well. But the thing is that, you know, these legacy platforms, they were never designed for the analytical workloads that we're trying to throw at them today. And when we start looking at our more privileged data sets like smart meter data, right, which is a very large data set compared to everything else, we want to place analytics in the hands of users at the speed of thought where they can ask the question at the time they're thinking and they can drive other questions so we don't have to do these big long-winded SDLC cycles. Now, that's the thing we're going for. And pretty much in any analysis, when you start to look at, well, if I want to be able to service my regular reporting workloads, you have to be able to do that and stay in business. And I want to be able to service the analytic workloads that are upcoming. And generally, it points, in my experience, to some sort of massively parallel platform. The other appeal of in the cloud is a truly elastic workload. So we're not talking click the button, dial up the warehouse, and 24 hours later, you get the thing dialed up, right? We're talking something that will dial itself up in 1 or 2 minutes. And we genuinely use that. So you're doing a forecast, that's great. You do a new forecast model, you need to backcast 12 months to prove this forecast model, right, is materially better than the last one. That can take days, right, to push that through. We can dial up the compute in Azure, and we can push that through in a matter of hours and then dial it back down. Right, that's extremely useful. And then the other thing is storing the data closer to the analytics platforms, right? So we're headlong into things like Power BI. You've got things like Azure Machine Learning, Microsoft R. At the end of the day, you know, it doesn't hurt to have the data a bit closer to those platforms. And increasingly, our core transactional systems, as people move to cloud for more of the core transactional systems like CRM, again, the data's in the right place, right? You know, at the moment, if we look at our CTS platforms, it's probably billing, the big one, that's sort of on-premise. Pretty much everything else is heading out towards the cloud. It plays well in the analytics ecosystem. So you just heard me, you know, talk about we use Power BI, we look at things like Azure Machine Learning and so forth. Yeah, Data Lake is another one. Okay, so this one's about SQL Data Warehouse, but there's a Data Lake conversation to be had, right? That's an adjacency. Azure SQL Warehouse plays well into those environments, so that's advantageous for us. We're pretty keen on that poly-based external table support for blob storage that Matt showed before. Right, that's a great way to load data in, and it's also a great way to stage your data very cost-effectively. And I'm expecting to see our services in a future imminent release, right? I mean, it must turn up. It's in everything else. It's in Azure Machine Learning. It's in SQL 2016. It's in Power BI. Right, I'd be a little bit miffed if it turns up in Access Web Services and SharePoint before it gets to Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So whilst there's no announcement, I'm expecting it any day soon, right? And we would be very keen on that. Speed to market. This one is very important. You know, the ease of cloud deployment versus a physical appliance or one of those DIY clusters that you can build. The scalability, which we just talked about earlier, about being able to push the compute up and down, and certainly capacity scales in and out. Total cost of ownership, it's favorable OPEX, these things, but there's no big CAPEX for hardware and upgrades and the skills. It's Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Yes, there are some subtle differences from regular vanilla SQL, not enough to worry about, right? The skills, essentially, there's virtually no retraining or upskilling. I threw it in front of some new guys, didn't give them any training, they didn't ask for any training. I think they'd find that an insult anyway, right? And they're up and running with it within the day. It's not hard to get there. We're going good on time, so just a quick anecdote, right? I mean, anecdotes are good. This ease of cloud deployment versus physical, right? This is just a notes from the field, right? Personal experience with appliances. If you're looking at massively parallel, it's generally an appliance, right? That's a good thing. And appliances are generally easier than DIY. Well, some people might argue that, right? But you can get going pretty fast in a virtualization cluster. Thing about it, in a previous gig, I had the pleasure, if you like, or the luxury of deploying 4 data warehouse analytics appliances. So that was 2 and 2 each data center. Now, if you're putting in these appliances, you have to allow for capacity expansion. So if you're going to expand these things ever or upgrade to a different model, you've actually got to allow for adjacent rack space. So you're not talking about 2 racks now into a data center. You're actually talking about 4 racks. By the time you get to 4 racks, we found ourselves opening up a new aisle. So now we're bringing not only power, but we're bringing copper and fiber across the new aisle. That's fine. And then you've got the seismic bracing and all the electrical mechanical engineering, but these things are 700 kilos each. That's good. So we kind of went through all that. And of course, you did the first thing you do when you go into a data center, you open up a new aisle, you pull up the floor tiles, see what's down there, where's the power. And of course, what we found was the sprinkler head, right, which is not helpful, right, having a sprinkler head down there. So we had to go and move that as well. And so we got set up. We bought these appliances. They take a while. It's a bit of a lead time on these things, right? It's not like going down Harvey Norman's. You got these things, put them in. and we want to set up the switching. Now, we bought these things, right, outright. Clear title, our data warehouse appliance. I want to put two switches in the top, right, for the COP and the 10G, 2U in the top of the rack, heat sink room. No. Warranty invalid, so much as look at it funny. So I had to bring in a fifth rack to put the switches in there, just for that. So we put the fifth rack in and pulled up the floor tiles, and what I find, I found another sprinkler head, right? This was really not fun. This was quite a long-winded process. But was it worth it at the end? Yeah, we got really good performance. The thing about the appliances, and this wasn't a problem with the appliance per se, but yeah, the notion of going physical and into data centers and so forth, there is quite a lot more effort, right, than just dialing up something in the cloud. You know, assuming you've got an Azure subscription set up, it's about an hour, less than an hour to actually get going with data warehouse and you can start loading data, and that's genuine, right? You can absolutely do it. It wasn't an hour, right, to do this. In fact, even after we got the appliances in there, commissioning it meant getting the three musketeers, one from Sydney, one from Singapore, one from Atlanta, right on site before we could turn the thing on. So there's quite a bit of effort to it. You know, it wasn't like going to Harvey Norman's and buying a fridge. I didn't get 60 months interest free. I didn't get free delivery and installation in the greater Auckland region. Right, there's a big lift, and I'm committed to that for a long time, right, because you bought a large piece of capacity. So, you know, when I was looking, we were early on looking at Parallel, APS, the original appliance. A couple of years ago, I went to Melbourne and spent some time with Matthew Winter putting it through his paces. We knew in the back of our head that this thing would almost certainly go cloud. So we bided our time. It went into private preview. We were one of the first private preview customers, and you know, as the story goes, it went from there, went GA with it. Certainly when I was looking at the options of, you know, can I put something in the cloud and get going quickly, or should I go for physical appliances, I'm kind of looking at going, I'll go cloud. So, demo. Blank screen. So I thought, since motto is no risk, no fun, I would build the demo in situ rather than one that I baked earlier. So what we're looking at here is our interval data. Right? So a lot of the stuff, if anyone else in the energy game, is bound to be someone, right, this would be pretty familiar type stuff. And I've got the interval data, so we read meters every half hour, so you get 48 meter reads a day, right, by every element on the meter, by every household we have, right, for X number of years. So if you do the arithmetic, you start to get a few reads, a few rows into your database. I've got a date dimension, we've got a consumer dimension there. In the interest of data privacy and me keeping my job, which I quite like at the moment, we might stay away from the consumer dimension today, right, we'll just stick with the date and the shape. So what it's gonna do is, I'm using Power BI because, you know, visualizing it, bringing it to life here is obviously better than sitting in SSMS typing some count underscore big type SQL commands. Kind of shows you how we might use the thing. So we'll take the interval along there. We'll take the day of week. And we'll take our consumption. We'll just average that. Right. Sure. Okay. I won't be so rude about the internet here. It's better than I thought. So what I've just built is the typical residential day load profile shape, the electricity uses, right, for typical residential for each day of the week over the last 2 or 3 years. Again, anyone in utilities, this is real, you know, familiar stuff. And you can see, this is not a data quality issue, that last bit. So we've got 48 periods. We've actually got 50, 49, and 50 on one of those traces. And the reason that's daylight savings. Right, you know, clock forward, clock back thing. One day a year we get 46, one day a year we get 50. It's something we have to deal with in the data. And what you can see is, you know, typical residential peak. We kind of on Monday to Friday, you're peaking around about the 16th period, so it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you get your evening peak coming in around about sort of 7, 8, 9. It's a broader peak. It's got a bit of a tail on it up there. The obvious thing here is Saturday, Sunday. You can see straight away, there's a delayed peak, right? Obviously, weekends. People get going late in the morning. In fact, it's as late as about 10 a.m. Right, so, and you go, okay, that's cool, right? I've got a peak. What does that tell me? Well, what have I really done? Was it useful? So we should probably just put in the number of rows. We'll just count that. And make it so that you can read it. Okay. So it's not an insignificant number of rows that we just average for every period, right, to generate these shapes and give us the insight. And frankly, I got no other way of doing this, right, back at work. So, yeah, I haven't got the commas in there, but it's 11 digits long, so there's 17 and a half billion records, right, that we're just aggregating on the fly. So let's just play with, we might as well play with this a little bit more while we've got a good thing going. Let's do another one. So it's going to be a bit squash. Screen resolution once we're plugged in here is not quite what we're used to. So let's look at national holidays. Okay, let's just give ourselves some room. And filter it off. I'll just pick a couple of interesting ones. I was saying I observed Anzac Day, Mondayisation, all that sort of stuff that kicked in back in 2013. So you see the day shape for these special holidays is quite different, right? You know, Christmas Day, the green trace, really flat in the afternoon. Everyone's out there having barbecues, people on holiday circles, right? You know, the consumer behaviour is very different on a Christmas day, what you expect. Anzac's an interesting one, because as you know, in the morning, Anzac Day is not a trading day. It's only in the afternoon. So you get this very flat morning. You don't get much of a peak, but then in the afternoon it kicks in and everyone's out shopping. Now, and the point of this is, you can say, well, so what? Well, I tell you what, if you're an energy trader, right, in a wholesale department, this matters quite a lot, right, being able to cruise the data and look at it like this. And, you know, anecdotally, you know, not recently, we look after the forecast for the trading desk as well, and I got rung up saying, well, we're not sure about the forecast. Intuitively, we think it's going to be this on this holiday, but the forecast is telling us that, right, what should we do? So what do? We visualise the data, right, the first thing we do, right, is pull up something like this and get a visual on what we think it should be and give them some confidence. And the decision they're looking from is straight away, right, not 8 hours after analysis. So they want the decision straight away is, can I trust the forecast or should I go with the intuition? Not that worried about fixing the algorithm right now, just which way should I go? Right? And you can give them the confidence by giving them the visual. You can only give them the visual, we can actually pull the data this easily. Right? It's about making that decision quickly. If we couldn't make the decision and give them some guidance within the first an hour or so, what they're going to do, they're going to have to either turn on a power station right at Huntley or hedge their position in market. The hedge has a big financial implication. And turning on a power station is not like starting your car. Right, you get them going, you can't just turn them off again straight away. So, you know, this stuff has real value, real application. And just before we drop off demo, I just do want to have a look at one other thing. So, you know, the monthly shape for residential around the country, and this mimics the national shape for everyone fundamentally, but if we just filter that down a little bit. Just pick a month like January. Okay, that's cool, January. The morning peak is a bit late in the morning, it's around about 8 o'clock, right? We mean a lot of holidays in January, like only half the people at work, school holidays, everything else, right? So in general, the country wakes up slower. It's got this thing going on in the evening. But if we bring in, I won't do too much of this, bring in February. Right, everyone's back at work. Right, morning peaks move back early in the day. Okay, so you're starting to get into more normal routines. But the interesting thing is you go to March. It's fine, day peaks the same. Look at the evening, right? It's suddenly flicked. So consumer behaviour changes quite radically in March. Now, you're still in daylight savings, but you're getting right towards the end of it. Temperature's definitely dropping in the evening. The daylight hours are getting shorter. People change their behaviour right, quite significantly. Now, I'll just do one more. April. So, right, temperatures are really dropping now. Daylight hours, you come off daylight saving, right, it's dark at night. The whole evening peak changes quite radically. So this is the sort of insights that we can just put in the hands of users today, right, easily. And the thing about why is this such a big deal? Well, if you think about it, we loaded the data through Polybase. So loading this data into the data warehouse is nothing more than extracting some files and dropping it in blob storage. That's it, right? That's my total staging. I don't have the traditional staging layer in the data warehouse. I don't have to worry about getting rid of the data after 6 days. I don't have to worry about the storage and all that stuff that comes with it. It's so cheap in blobs, which I could keep the data forever and finally realize my dream of persistent staging. We haven't done the atomic warehouse and dimensional model type layers as well, right? The data's just gone in raw. We've just chucked Power BI against it, and away you go, right? There's really nothing to do. I haven't had to put an analysis service in there. I haven't had to try and second guess the aggregates the users want. I haven't tried to second guess what shape they want the data in. Right, they can do it themselves on the fly. Sure, we might build some curated views at some point, but the cool bit is I can give it to them, you go play with it and come back when you're ready, right? And you decide what you want, and then we'll build the curated view. So in that regard, right, it's extremely powerful. Is there noise in the data, right? We didn't do any, I didn't talk about data quality. Hell yes, 17.5 billion records, of course there's noise in it, right? There'll be heaps of noise. Do I care? No. Do my users care? No. Would we make a decision different from it if I fix the data? No. Would it change any of those shapes on the screen? No, right? Not too bothered about that. And one of the things is when you've got the smaller data sets, data quality is a big issue because you don't have a big sample size. But when you've got such a big sample size, right, you can certainly tolerate noise in the data. So one of the other cool things, that stuff sort of goes away. So. So just to confirm, I didn't cheat with the demo. Right? So 17.5 billion rows in our fact tables, range partitioned by month. There's about just on not quite 3 years of data in there. A data warehouse units, I don't know Miles talked about too much. So the scale, it's the arbitrary scale of compute capability in Azure SQL data warehouse. Right? It starts at 100, that's as low as you can go. It goes up to 6,000 now, didn't always. Our one, we set it for this demo at 1,000. Right? So it's a comparatively modest level. Now, temptation to burst up to 6,000 is immense, but that would be disingenuous, and frankly, we don't need to. It goes great down there. Encryption, yes, transparent data encryption turned on. Does it impose some sort of overhead? You'd hope so, right? Load patterns that we like. So you heard from Miles and Matt about some of the load patterns. I'm going to talk to you about the ones that we like, that work for us. Standard US automaker disclaimer, right? Your mileage may vary, right? It's not necessary for you. For the really large or ACOD loads, i.e. the data that we just looked at, right, those big fact tables, we use Polybase, right, for sure. It is just easy. It's fast, right, we're getting about 100,000 rows a second into the data warehouse using Polybase, and it just works. For us, in our case, in my scenario, these large historical loads, breaking the data flow down into chunks, so you extract, right, out of Oracle, we copy across the blob storage, and then we load with Polybase, breaking it down was advantageous. Right, because we effectively did in our spare time in between our day job. And I've got people on the team who are pretty handy with Perl, and they know the Oracle environment well, they can get the extraction going. Right, we've got a script that just does AZ copy. Other end, a couple of the SQL people, you know, they're very comfortable writing a few lines of TSQL and load the thing into Polybase. And in fact, you know, if you're going to load 17.5 billion records, trying to do the whole thing in one end-to-end pipeline is probably not the best approach anyway. Right, you'd always want to break this down a little bit. So that works for us. Why wouldn't you do it this way? Well, like, it is a fragmented process, right? So there's no end-to-end control flow. If you want the integration service catalog, all the logging, all the monitoring, and all the scheduling that goes with it, right, then you need to wrap that in something, whether it's an enterprise scheduler or maybe use ADF, right? Might be a better way to go, or an SSIS job. But you know, you don't get that single pane of glass control flow doing it that way. You have to first get the data into Azure Blob Storage, right, with some specific encoding. So it needs to be UTF-8. There's a couple of other encodings. I can't remember what they are. We're easy coming out of a Unix system. It's always going to be UTF-8 anyway. But bear in mind, if you've rinsed it through a Windows file system and a Windows text and a few other bits and pieces, your data may be no good anymore. That assumes the transformations are performed afterwards. So this is very much in the ELT vein pattern, not the ETL. But that's the way we wanted it, right? The users work best with that type of data, just getting it raw. For the regular loads, we use SSIS, right? Good old SSIS. Why? End-to-end control flow. Okay, so yeah, that is a good thing to do for the regular loads. You want something to happen every night. You really do want the schedules. You do want integration services catalog. You want the logging, the whole lot. Acceptable speeds for daily loads. So, you know, we use bulk insert. That's essentially BCP. Yeah, it works fine for what we're putting in. You can do all the usual transformations that you're used to. And it's familiar patterns and practices in keeping with what your team, you know, works with today. And we leverage our existing investment in SSIS. So, you know, for us, that's a no-brainer. And why wouldn't you do SSIS? I honestly can't think of that many reasons for the sort of size of data sets we're working with. It's really, if you've got really big stuff and you're worried about performance, then bear in mind with SSIS, the bulk insert task and BCP, you know, they're single-threaded tasks. So you're not really taking advantage of the massively parallel characteristics of your target platform, right, by doing that. But for, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's not really a big deal for us. Some things we did along the way. So, encryption. It's one click in the portal. You go click, and your data rest is encrypted. Or you can do it one line, right, in the SQL command line. You just do it, right, honestly. Do I trust Microsoft? No, I don't, actually. I don't trust anyone, and that's why we encrypt the data. Express route. So you hear quite a bit about this. We've added this recently, only last month or so, 200 megabit second express route up to, see, I think we have about 20 millisecond round trip latency, that sort of thing. It's well worth having. It's very good. And if I'm honest, that 17.5 billion row fact table, I loaded the first half without express route, and then when I knew we were getting it, I kind of down tools and waited till we got it. So it'd be a whole lot easier doing the second half. But it's not the end of the world if you don't have it. We ran without it for months, right? Standard VPN out of our internet connection. I would say, if you haven't got Azure SQL Data Warehouse at the moment and you're looking at dipping your toe in the water and start to have a bit of play with it, I would just avoid the express route, right? It'll slow you down setting it up. You know, you can get going in an hour in SQL Data Warehouse. You certainly won't do an express route in an hour or a day or a week, right? There's a bit more to it, right, when you've got the WAN and the routing. Pause and scale, really good feature. So you're paying, right, for time, compute time. So obviously, if you want to optimize your spend, don't run the thing when you don't need to. Sounds obvious, right, but it's easy to get lazy and leave these things turned on. So you can do options. You can pause it, for example, overnight, right? Or you could scale it down to 100 data warehouse units, wind it right down. So if you preferred it to be available and still accessible and happy just to let a job take a bit longer, you'd obviously scale it right down. Bear in mind, either way, you need to use Azure Automation. That's a fairly fancy name for what is essentially a scheduler and a bunch of your finest PowerShell scripts. Right? There are templates in there. The template to turn on is about 300 lines, and the template to turn off is effectively the same. Or you do what I did, and I complained to Matt, and he wrote me one in 8 lines that did much the same thing. So that's quite good value. And the management layer. So up until recently, it's Visual Studio and SQL Server Data Tools. That's all very well and good, but most of us who manage large SQL environments are quite accustomed and enjoy having SQL Server Management Studio. Fortunately, a couple of months ago, right, they added support for Azure SQL Data Warehouse into that. So very happy with that. The users spoke, they listened. Bear in mind that there's not much right-click support in there at the moment for Azure SQL Data Warehouse. In fact, I don't think there's any that I can think of. Pretty much everything done in a T-SQL window. Now, for most of you in the audience, that's not a big deal, right? In fact, that's probably the way you prefer to do it. You want the consistency, you want the reliability, quality, and all that traceability. For people like me, it obviously slows me down a bit. But if you ask my team, they think that's a fabulous feature. It improves integrity of the service by limiting what I can do in there. So for most of you, it's not really going to be an issue. And that, to be honest, that's pretty much all I had to share with you today, right, regarding our journey into SQL Data Warehouse. I'll hand back to Miles. He's got a couple of slides to close out with before we go to questions.
Thank you. I have to say, it's a tough act to follow, Matt and Chris, and thank you very much, guys. But we are going to make some time to ask some questions. But I want to make some announcements. Because at the exact same time Ignite is on, SQL Pass is on. And I don't know if anyone's been looking at this familiar with the SQL Pass conference, but they've just announced a 1 month free trial of Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Okay? So this is absolutely the perfect time to have a go with this product. So, you know, I think if we just sort of recap what we've seen today, and actually what we've been doing with the technology. We've actually taken you through the different techniques of being able to load Azure SQL Data Warehouse. And you've seen Chris handle some scenarios that really would have taken a huge amount of time to do on-premises. And an ability to be able to burst up the amount of compute that they need to load data and to handle some of the forecasting models and then dial it back down is incredible. The fact that he gets started within an hour is also really amazing. The other thing that's really exciting about this is that our technology like reporting services, Power BI, are all being able to connect directly back to these technologies. So it's very easy for you to use this stack with your current reporting technologies that you already know and love. Now, I think I'd like to invite Chris and Matt to come up, and we'd like to just open the floor to some questions. And what I might do is I might repeat the questions. We don't have microphones today. So, anyone got a question to start with? Don't make me pick some of you. I will know you in the audience, so. G'day.
So, I noticed you were talking about desktop. What were you talking to when you were, so where was your data source? Is that in the Azure data?
Direct query.
Yep.
Direct query. Sorry, I didn't call that out. This is really small in the bottom right, but if you want, I'll pop it back up. It's direct query mode.
Direct query.
Yep, no cheating.
I'll just recreate the question. So what you were using the Power BI desktop, what was the connection that you were using back to the Azure SQL Data Warehouse?
So direct query.
Direct query. So that direct query is basically the data is not being stored, obviously, in Power BI. And every time we run the report, it runs that query directly against it. Fastest way of getting the kind of aggregation. Great question.
Australia East.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we hosting? We're hosting in Australia East. So it's available in Australia East in production.
To the left. Yeah. I'm happy to tell you to the left. I can't break it out now, right? I'll talk to you afterwards. And the main reason is we use Azure for a lot, right? It's not just SQL Data Warehouse, right? We've got VMs running in there. We're using a whole bunch of app services. We're using a whole bunch of the OMS management stuff. We've got other storage things going on. So to break it out. But put it this way, it is extremely competitive with buying in clients over a large number, you know, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, no problem.
If you want to catch up afterwards, I'll take you through the actual sizing, pricing calculator for this, and it'll give you a great way of looking at that.
I will say this, you should use the pause and scale, right? It just makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there were some other hands. Is there another question over here? Yep. Yes. So Data Factory is only stored in the States. But Matt, do you want to explain how Data Factory is actually working against Australia East? How that
Yeah, works? I didn't really call out in the portal, but you can actually see that the copy activity occurs in Australia East. So that's where the warehouse was in the demo. There's kind of an orchestration node which lives in the West US. There's a couple of other places. I think there's 3 regions available for that kind of control flow. But the actual worker process where it's doing the lifting is all within the region. So I believe it's available in everywhere apart from Brazil at the moment. So it's available in Australia. So yeah, I mean, yeah, if you look at the, you can actually look at the Data Factory portal and it shows you down the bottom, it says, you know, control flow running in Australia East.
Right, I've got time for one more question and then we'll end the session. Was there one on the other side there? Real good. Look, I want to say thank you very much to Matt and Chris and for everybody attending. Have a great party tonight. Looking forward to seeing you all. That's everything.